Okay, so welcome.
Hang on,
I'm
here
really excited because I'm here today with Laurel. Hi, Laurel.
Hello, Helen.
I've been looking forward to this. We got talking about subjects for doing this kind of talk, and it became clear that we both had this love affair, devotional thing going on with Jesus, with Christ, whatever we want to call him. And we arranged this to get online and just share some stories and maybe some experiences about it, because I know it's a huge, he's been a huge influence in your journey as well as mine. So thank you for volunteering to do this.
Oh, I'm thrilled. Yeah.
So do you want to just get us started and just kind of, maybe start with when you first sort of felt that connection, or when you first really were impacted in that way? It'd be lovely to hear.
I had no connection growing up with Jesus because I grew up in the Jewish faith. And I remember asking about Jesus and being told, we don't believe in him. And I remember thinking, oh, does that mean that everybody that's a Christian then is in love with a lie? I mean, that's what I thought. We don't believe in him. He didn't even exist.
It's
So.
quite hard to deal with as well, isn't it? If you feel suddenly, I mean, without wanting to get into the good and bad points of religion, but to suddenly someone that's means so much to a lot of beings, suddenly you're like, how do I deal with that?
I did not know how to deal with it. And so it was just put on the table. And when I was around college age, I did have some close friends that at that time we called them Jesus freaks. And so, they introduced me to the New Testament because, of course, I just grew up with the Old Testament. And I got a taste of the love affair and the devotion. And I think that's what hooked me.
So tell me about that taste then. I'm dying to hear about the taste.
Well, I just got so curious, right? I just got it's like, well, what is this? And why are what are you so who is this guy that you're so in love with? And they would quote me passages. I mean, they really knew they had grown up with this and this was very much part of their lives. And I just was fascinated. And just hearing this, they would tell me stories and parables and quotes. And, I just, there was something inside of me that just went, this is real. And I didn't feel that way growing up Jewish because my parents didn't believe in God. So I had nothing to, I didn't have it inside of me just growing up to fall in love with somebody my parents didn't believe in. And so it was the first time I actually felt my heart stir and feel something personal. I had already, I guess, been very attracted to Buddhism and was studying Buddhism. And but I set it all aside when I had these friends. And but I was suddenly kind of taken away from them. I got ill and moved away and didn't really get to be around them. So it was like it opened me up and I was interested, and then I was very ill for quite a long while. And but I will say that when I was ill, that I was very ill. I was in the hospital, and I was probably 21. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I was very confused and lost, and I'd be watching TV, and then I'd realize that the TV wasn't turned on, it was hallucinating. But one day, very clearly, I heard Jesus speak to me from the wall behind me. And he said, why don't you consider being a nurse?
Wow.
I had never, ever considered being a nurse. I wanted to be a fashion designer.
Slightly different than a
A
nurse, yeah.
little different field. But when he said that, it resonated. And I, being in the hospital, I was in isolation. And pe the people that would come in, occasionally a nurse, mostly it was probably the nursing assistants, I was so grateful for somebody to just come in and be a human and talk to me and be with
Yeah,
me for a
that
moment. I thought
connection.
the connection. And I thought, I can do that. That's
Yeah.
what I thought. And that's what I thought I'd be really good at as a nurse. And I was. There's a lot more to it though.
Well, yeah, I guess so, but so this nudge came out of the blue, seemingly in the depths of your worst time, maybe.
It was a difficult time, and I was very lost. And I had dropped out of college, and my parents were worried about me, and I was worried about me because I didn't have any direction. I was very depressed.
Mm-hmm.
So, he saved me.
Yeah,
that's how I look
at
it.
I know it's a cliche though, but I really feel. I mean, some people say it's a cliche. I mean, but he saved me. But I really feel the same way. There was perhaps the worst and darkest time that I've ever been through, worse than my own depression when I was sort of early to late, mid to late 20s and into my 30s. It was a really, I didn't know at the time, but it was the start of my awakening. And there was this really dark, horrible time where I just lost all faith in the fact that there was anything outside of my mind and body, you know, and I think I'd actually even decided to be an atheist for a while, which is quite funny now looking back. But there was this picture of Christ one day. Used to have all these pictures when I decided I was going to get on a path of all these famous, beautiful beings that we revere. And it was the same thing, right in the worst moment where I was totally lost. And there was this. It wasn't a word or a sound or it was just this intense connection through the heart. And like you said it so well, it was the first time I felt my heart actually stir, because it had all been up here, the awakening, before. I know a lot about this, you know, so I really resonated with what you said there. He did save me, perhaps not in the religious way, but it was... It alters your life, the course of your life then, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I do. I owe my life. You know, I would never have chosen nursing. Mm-hmm. And nursing was amazing for me to be of service to people. It had never occurred to me.
Yeah. I can't imagine you doing anything else. I guess you're in a different place, you know, and doing something that serves other beings. But I guess you were very lost at that point and didn't know what would fill your heart with, you know, before this at least.
I don't think I even knew about having a heart. My heart was so closed and so protected and so afraid of everything in life at that point.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how did your relationship develop then after that with Christ? Did you kind of, were you always aware on some subtle level, or is it more pronounced?
I would say that it was intermittent, my relationship with Christ. And at certain times, he would come and I would talk to him. I would ask him a question. I remember at one point, I wanted to know about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't understand how anybody, like how Hitler could be forgiven.
Yeah.
And he told me that, yes, Hitler has been forgiven. And that blew my mind. But that by that time, I was probably about 35 when that happened. I never had what I guess what I would call a constant abiding relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I always knew that he was there and that I could call on him. And that was a great sense of security. But I would say though that I didn't really, because I was so, my heart had a lot of trouble in this incarnation, believing that there was anybody there that would love me and, you know, could be there for me. And it really wasn't until so much later when I got into A Course in Miracles and was reading what he said in that book that it finally hit me that he was always with me.
Yeah.
That he couldn't not be with me. And I started crying at that point because it just was such a great relief to know that this was truly was an eternal relationship. And then I never was alone because that was the story I told myself
Yeah.
My whole life.
And I think that's about the most painful place we ever find ourselves, isn't it? That perhaps we might not feel that we fit in so much with our biological family, and we might just feel kind of really, especially if we're interested in awakening and we want to, even if we don't know what that is at the time, we might just feel, I remember feeling very, very, well, alone is a good word. The people that I was, grew up with aren't interested in what I'm interested in. And was yet at the time to find other people that wanted the same thing. So it was this light, definitely a light in a bitter darkness, who was going to, like you said so well, always going to be there, no matter what. And there was that constant feeling of non-judgment, that nothing I could do ever or think or say would ever be too much, you know. Obviously we strive to be more loving and forgiving, but you know, there's just this safety, security of no matter what, I'm accepted by him. You know, that kind of feeling is just, it fills some part of your soul back up, doesn't it, that's just completely disconnected somehow.
Well, you know, when you talk about the karmic patterns, you know, that we mostly all share,
yeah.
You know, that's where he comes in for me.
Yeah.
Because I really thought there was something really bad and wrong about me. Yeah. Ever since, that was my first memory, actually, was that, like, I was a bad seed, really, in just trying to hide it and looking like I was okay and that I was a good person. But I just really felt something was terribly dark and wrong inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when you feel like that, of course, you don't feel like you have any worth and you don't feel like you're safe then. And, you know, those karma patterns, to me, when you describe them like that, I went, oh, they're really all this. They all go together. They all hold hands.
Yeah.
And so his love, you know, I think was like what you're saying. I thought, well, by that time, I mean, I knew I wasn't such a bad person.
Yeah, you're starting to figure that out. Yeah,
I start to figure it out. Exactly. Yeah, I suspected it.
Yeah.
But his realizing and being able to open my heart to receive his love helped me so much. Mm-hmm. To see that, yeah, he loved me unconditionally. All this darkness that I had been living with, I mean, I didn't know what to do with it, and I really didn't know how to work with it. I've been trying my whole life to get rid of it, right? But yeah. His acceptance of it, and even the fact that, well, he would love me despite this, or even if I knew he had, you know, that Hitler had been forgiven, so obviously I was not in that category.
Yeah.
there was that saving factor again. You know, I just felt like I was redeemed in a sense.
That's powerful, isn't it? And that I remember that when I first felt that love, I was looking at his picture. It was just a drawing, but it was the standard drawing of a picture of him with his hands out. You know, like almost in a, just come here and stop being so silly. I love you anyway. You know, if the picture could have spoken. And I was sitting in my bedroom, and it was one of the worst days ever I'd ever had. And I just about decided that if I couldn't make awakening happen, I wanted to leave the body. I couldn't do it anymore. And that wasn't like an idle thing. That was, I couldn't even find the energy to hope anymore. You know, it was just, I'm sure you've been there. I'm sure a lot of us have. So I was just staring at this picture and of Christ, and suddenly the heart in the drawing, he has this white, you know, robe on, but he has this really enlarged heart that you know, drawn on the picture, and this bright pink heart just started glowing in this picture. And I'm thinking, because I wasn't one for like massive spiritual experiences, it's all been very boring up until, you know, this point. And I started to think I'm hallucinating or something. And I looked at this picture and this heart just seemed to come out towards me. And I know it sounds like a total cliche here, but there was just this utter, I don't know what the word is, like he was going to love me no matter what I thought about myself. And he didn't care what I thought I had to work on still. It was just this immensity of love. And I could only let a little bit of it in. I think it was like a minute. And I was just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. But it opened the way. I ended up sitting with Adyashanti and had this same many, many times bigger experience. But it was enough as a little crack in this hard shell of, you know, I'm obviously not a good person type of thing. I'm obviously not a good seeker either because I can't even find awakening. You know, I'm sure we've all been there. What surprised me, it just came with this divine authority with it, this absoluteness, you know, this certainty that it does not matter what I've done. Even if I had done, you know, horrible things, it just would not matter. That I was loved anyway. And that would always be the case, no matter what. And there was something profoundly different about my whole life after that moment. Just sitting alone in my bedroom, just up here, you know, above where I'm sitting right now, funnily enough. And I thought I was going crazy. I didn't tell anyone. Who am I going to tell anyway? My mom, my sister, they would just, right. You know. And I decidedly didn't tell my kids because I thought I was weird enough anyway, you know, meditating for hours. So I'm sure. but it was enough. I didn't need to tell anyone. It was different. Like there was this different, it was enough. There was something full in here, off, at least not totally empty anymore. You get a sense of what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I don't think I've ever talked about this with anybody.
Oh, wow. So, I'm very honored. Thank you.
Yeah. because mostly, I've talked a lot about A Course in Miracles with people, but really not about my personal experiences. So this is, I guess I just, my mind is catching up now and going like, yeah, that's right. This is the being that helped open my heart and helped me to that crack of, I can really be loved, you know, really.
This could actually happen. This could.
Yeah.
This is already happening. It's irrelevant whether I resist it or not. It's really, it would just wash over all of that. If I let this in, it wouldn't matter. My best resistance would just be meaningless. Something like that, right?
And then I think when I read A Course in Miracles, there was no resistance anymore. It was just like, take me.
Yes, you know,
I'm surrendered.
Beam me up, yeah.
That's right.
Up until that.
Flood me.
Say again?
Flood me with that love.
Yeah. You know? And that was exactly, funny you said that. That was my, I went from wanting to leave to begging to get that experience back again. Any which way, like, what do I need to do to... The very next day, I was on my knees praying, and I'd never prayed in my entire life.
Oh, my gosh.
But I was praying for this picture to give me something again, you know, something. But, you know, I came to realize eventually it was the try before you buy thing, you know, where you, it's what you're missing out on if you stay closed, you know. To. But, of course, I didn't realize that for a while. But it totally changed everything, because I think up until that point I had this very Old Testament perspective of Christ, and I'd read the New Testament but many years ago, and I was very kind of anti-religion, you know, the God of religion, you know, the wrathful, vengeful deity figure, you know. So this was just total, okay, that's not what God really is. This is what it is, and there was no arguing with that. And it was just enough to keep me going and make me really want to open my heart, you know, in a way that I hadn't had the courage to do before. I think we fear this on some level, don't we? Our egoic sense of self fears this judgment of a wrathful, divine figure or something, you know, and all of our attempts at life, improving our life is about appeasing that angry parent figure of God, you know, and he was something completely different. I mean, intellectually, I knew it wasn't that, but somewhere inside the cells of my being, there was this fear about the divine. And this was, okay, so totally isn't that at all. Here's what it really is. It's funny now looking back, but yeah. So, wow. And A Course in Miracles, I haven't studied it anywhere near in depth like you have. I mean, did you study it for a long time or?
No, you know, like 5 years. That's not long in that world.
Only 5 years.
Well, it's not long in that world. I mean, but
yeah, true.
I had a teacher who was from the heart. And that's one of the problems that people get into with A Course in Miracles. It becomes very intellectual. And I didn't even know that. I mean, so of course I had been guided to the teacher that actually was putting these principles into action and was heart oriented. So those 5 years were very rich, very, very rich.
Was that more moments of connection or insight or guiding from Christ? How did that manifest?
Oh my gosh, all of the above.
Okay.
There's so much wisdom in that book. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm in awe of the other Helen, you know, that channeled that book for over, you know, a decade. I mean, that so many words could come through and how just I like you, I love words too. The writing in that book is just, it's poetry, really. It's elegant. It's exquisite. And so just reading it is incredible. And then it's like every page would have, I mean, I do that with you too. Sometimes I'll go, okay, that satsang had the teaching that if I just listen to that satsang for the rest of my life, that's enough, right? It's all there. And there's 1,000 pages of that in A Course in Miracles.
That's a lot of wisdom.
It's a lot, yeah.
I remember being utterly struck by the first look that's like, I think it's even on like the second or third, before you even get into the text, it's just like, nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. And in its book, I think I spent about 3 or 4 hours crying, you know, after reading that the first time. but it spoke to me of that certainty, that authority I was trying to describe earlier, that of the divine love that was coming from Christ. Absolutely, this cannot be ever threatened. And there's just something absolute in that. I can't really think of a better word at the moment than absolute, but
I know what you're saying.
There's no doubt there at all, is there? No room for any doubt when you feel like
no, kind of. No. And I wanted to say too, when you were talking about the God of the Old Testament, that when I would go to the temple, because I went through the religious training as a child, and of course the rabbi reads from the first 5 books of Moses, and I just remember sitting there, and maybe I was 8 or 9, and he was talking about the wrath of God, and I remember thinking, God is scary, and I better hide. And that was a decision to literally, you know, and I think that's why my heart became so protected, because I did not want anybody to see who I really was, because I thought God would kill me if he saw who I really was. And it was like sitting there in the temple, I almost visualized myself going into the back corner of the temple. And just staying there and being quiet, and so nobody would see me.
I remember feeling Patrick. We used to go. We didn't go very long when I was a child, but my mom and dad explored a church, and I remember being absolutely petrified to actually step inside the church. I thought I was gonna, and it sounds really ridiculous now, but I'm sure I thought I was gonna set on fire because I'd heard these couple of, you know, teachings. Similar about this very different God type entity than we know what divinity actually is now. But there was this very small child who was very feeling very evil and bad inside. And I thought, if I step foot in this church, I'm going to, you know, something bad, really bad is going to happen, you know, because this is like sacred ground, isn't it? And here I'm about to go with, because very similar to you. And I'm sure a lot of beings really, really thought that there was a lot of darkness in terms of, the darkness in terms of lower energies, but in terms of there was something fundamentally flawed with me. I was absolutely certain I'd come out wrong. I'd been made wrong, something like that. Which, of course, in Miracle speaks to, of course, you know, well, all authentic teachings. But so it's such a relief to actually find this different portrayal of Christ that you find in the Course in Miracles. And I remember exploring later on Adyashanti's Resurrecting Jesus, which paints a very, very different picture as well. And when I went to see Adyashanti in London, his talk was actually about redemptive love.
Oh,
wow. How that divine presence of love that has the capacity to redeem, and redeem not meaning making whole that which was broken, but to help that which is perfect realize it's perfect. And that was just what that very first moment from that picture, that was it right there. There never was anything wrong with us. That was the certainty. I just had to remember that then, right, and keep letting that in. That's the task then. So it was a moving away, and I'm sure everybody can appreciate this, from the what I thought Christ was to the actual experience of Christ consciousness. And it sounds like you've been on this similar journey to actually keeping your heart open and actually realizing what that divine presence really is.
Absolutely, yes. Because at the beginning, I really didn't understand the difference between, I didn't know, I thought like Christ was his last name. I mean, I didn't really understand what Christ was or what the Christ consciousness was all about, and how he, I mean, you know, I really never read the New Testament, you know, but apparently how he became Christed. Mm-hmm. In his experience on earth. And I still marvel that, you know, he came 2000 years ago and he is just as active, you know, in terms of influencing people, more so now, right? Because there's more of us on the planet.
Yeah.
But I mean, just what a, I can't think of anybody that's more famous than him, really, that more
no,
people
if you think
would
of
know
the
about.
One person, maybe the Buddha might be
exactly
a second, but that's about it really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And just this humble being, you know, coming with this incredible message. And like, why did he choose that time? You know, but obviously that was the perfect time, because it has lasted all these centuries.
And I think what we're seeing now is the real manifestation of that, that he was and still is. It's actually coming into the second coming of Christ. It is not a physical figure maybe, but an actual global evolution of our species, you know, which is really underway.
I just got chills when you said that.
And boy, do we need it right now, you know, that if everyone could let that kind of love in, or at least a small percentage of us, be brave enough to open to that, even though they think something bad might happen to them, you know, and to be able to experience the opposite. Because I don't know about you, but I've put all these, I suppose, again, we all do, these spiritual heroes of mine up on pedestals. You know, Christ was this guy that had this glowing aura, and he could just touch someone and heal them. And I'm sure, you know, he could just look at someone and make them love themselves. But he was also, in his physical life, this very human being sometimes too. And he still if there's a still a depth of deepening for me in that relationship with Christ, it's about that, about appreciating, well, it's about many things, but appreciating the human beingness of it all as much as the woo, divine presence of it all, you know, the without either one of those, that there isn't this beautiful balance of life.
Yeah, he was, I mean, I don't know. I assume that, you know, his mom knew that he was special. Yeah. And he, I think he probably had training, you yeah. know, I think he probably went to Egypt and India and had
learned to be a yogi and all of that.
Yes. And so yeah. he learned, you know, he became a very learned being, but he didn't really come into his Christedness until John the Baptist, you know, baptized him and the Spirit came down.
Yeah.
And so he was, you know, just, yeah, like we would have met him on the street.
Yeah.
You know, how are you doing?
It's like any of the rest of us, you know, struggling to fulfill his awakening. And some very human moments, like in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he saw what was going to happen to him, and he just absolutely begged God not to go through that, you know, take this cup from me. But then again, immediately the forgiveness, the divine surrender, you know, okay, if this is my path, this is my path. Of course, I'm paraphrasing, but that was such a lesson for me in humility, that there's no way that there's no particular way that Christ would be in that moment. If he needs to beg and plead, he would do, you know, and that all of us have that divinity. We are that divinity, but we're also human beings too. We have some very horrible moments, very hard moments. And that was a lesson that Christ, another lesson that Christ taught me, that there's no way to get through. There's no special way to get through those moments. You just get through them with some kind of divine power sustaining you through those horrible human moments, and you come out the other side somehow.
You know, I think I've shared with you, and certainly others have heard it, that I really have been depressed my whole life and suicidal a lot of my life. And when I was, I don't know how old, maybe 40, 45, I don't know. I forget the ages of things, but I was very, very suicidal at that point. And I could not get through it. And I asked three of my closest friends who I considered very spiritually, you know, they had high vibrational energy. And I asked if I could, if they would sit in a triangular shape and I could just be in the middle of them and just feel their energy and just see if anything could happen. I had no idea what, but I was desperate.
Yeah.
And I had no agenda and I didn't ask them to do anything at all in particular. But so I lay down in the middle of them. They were sitting in three chairs around me. And I had a vision and I was taken to the time of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he was walking the hills and there was a whole flock of people. And in that lifetime, it's how it felt like. I was a slave. And I was a burned out, worn out, you know, there wasn't much left of me. And all I wanted to do was touch him, the yeah. hem of his garment, because I had heard.
Yeah.
And the next thing I knew, whoop, I'm like right in the middle of the people. I'm right next to him. And he turns to me and he looks at me right in the eyes and literally like light is coming out of his eyes. And he says, "You are as wondrous and beautiful as any being in the universe."
Wow.
And that was, I think, probably the most profound gift I've ever received. Because after he told me that, I didn't take it in like, oh yeah, now I know I'm okay.
I'm healed now.
Yeah, fine. I'm healed. No, that didn't happen. But I knew that he gave me the key. It's like, okay, I've got it now. He gave me this gift. And if I can just hold on to it and believe it and receive it, then there's a chance for me. And I think that really was the first time I actually even had a shred of a thought that maybe I'll be okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know how. But those words, and you know, when I've shared them with other people and they go, that sounds like something Jesus would say.
Oh, yes.
Because that's something I would have thought up. I think that's when I knew that love was the answer.
Yeah.
You know, before I think I intellectually knew it, but then I knew that, okay, if I can just have love be my North Star and lead me, then I have to just trust that it's going to take me where in a good direction, and it's going to take me into being able to love more, because I knew I needed it. I knew that I needed love more than anything, and that I was not believing that I had it. And so, that's it. Yeah. It's like, I am so attracted whenever I hear the word love, when anybody says the word love, I mean, I'm like, bing, you know, okay, that's it. I'm in the right place at the right time. You know,
that's the hardest thing for a human being to do is to open to love, isn't it? Especially
it
that kind of what we think divine love might be before we actually experience it. And something when I had that experience, it was enough to keep me going, like you were saying, and I got the sense I've been given something that would unfold over time, like my body just couldn't cope with the fullness of it straight away because there were too many barriers over my heart, and that would unfold over time more and more, but there was enough right there, as you were saying, to help me just hold on, or maybe even do a little bit better than holding on finally.
One of the people of the three that I had asked to surround me, he knew. He said, this is amazing, you know, this is a great gift. He actually had me, he videotaped me. He said, this is really important because you're still, like the next day he came over to the house and said, I'm going to interview and I want you to talk about this now because you're still in that energy. And he said, this is profound what has happened to you. You've got, I mean, he's the one that said, this is an amazing gift that you received. And then I went, okay, yeah. It's like I needed that reflection from somebody else outside of me to look back at me and say, look what you've gotten. And
do you think that's a memory of a past life then, or something that needed resolving that it helped you with, or that Christ helped you with?
Yeah, because that in that lifetime, it felt like I wanted to die. I wanted to kill myself. I was a slave. I had been sexually used and abused. And I was like old at that point. That was probably like 30 years old, right? I mean,
very old for those days, wasn't it?
But I was like falling. I was like nothing left of me, hardly. But he gave me hope. Somehow I had, and I feel like that's very much a parallel to this life, where even in all these dark, dark, dark times, that I didn't give up.
Yeah.
Didn't kill myself. I mean, that's even when I had a plan to and a date and the means, like having a daughter kept me alive. That was one way. But I know there's something inside of me that always was, there still could be a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I'm going to keep going just because something inside me just kept pulling me forward and not letting me end my life. And I think I relate to that aspect of me that was so bedraggled and so burned up, used
different circumstances, you know, bodily illness this lifetime, but Very same or similar, I should imagine, desperation and, you know, the darkness and all of that.
Wow. So, yeah, that was a great healing that I only am still, it's like still unfolding.
Yeah. Absolutely. And sometimes that courage, I don't know, we've called it love, but it also, what came for me from my experience and continues to is courage as well. Somehow even, I mean, it doesn't happen now these days, but when my thoughts will go to the darkest of places, right? I just want to leave this body. I can't do this anymore. I still have those thoughts after this experience, but I couldn't really linger there. And something just would bring me back to a sense of hope, which I don't think hope had been too expensive before that, because it was the possibility of disappointment afterwards. And I just couldn't take that anymore. I'm sure you, and if it wasn't for my kids and my family, I think, you know, it just wasn't an option. I couldn't go, although I wanted to. So, so that's a profound healing on a soul level or something, isn't it, that he provided and continues to.
Even last night, I find myself always attracted to watching films or series, you know, that portray him in that time. And even, you know, I've been to Israel, and oh my gosh, going to the old city, it is, there's no words. It is so profound, the energy in the old city, because it looks, I'm sure, pretty much just like it did in the days that Jesus walked through it. You feel, I did at least, but I'm sure everybody that's open to it feels the power of that physical place on earth, which is really like the center of three of the major religions on our planet.
Yeah, exactly.
His is for me, and I guess his story, you know, there's also associated with his pain, you know, the pain of the crucifixion. And but then the resurrection, and you talked about that book Gaudiya Shanti wrote about resurrection, you know, and in A Course in Miracles, he's saying that was the whole point.
Yeah.
The whole point was not the crucifixion. It was the resurrection. And people missed that point.
I mean, that in itself is fundamental, isn't it? Everyone's focused on the crucifixion. When he was really saying, look, this is what a, you know, all this I do, you can do and more, you know, paraphrasing, but all this is from my Father, not from me. But, you know, pointing to the latent potential of human beings, really what's possible for us is so very different than what we think, isn't it? To be able to come back into his body after 3 days, and a body is in perfect condition still, that's some powerful yogi, you know, real, a very realized being, isn't it? Definitely.
Absolutely. But it's available to us as well.
That was his essential message, that I think it still is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like this was a darn good time to choose to incarnate.
Yes.
This is really exciting times. Because when, you know, when in history have people actually realized, you know, some people realize that death isn't real.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... For me, who grew up believing death was not, you know, we went into the nothing. Nothing happened, you know, we were gone. There was no consciousness anymore. I mean, to understand that's a 180 in truth. And that we can consciously choose to leave our bodies. I mean, I'm not sure I will achieve that, but I know it's possible now.
Yeah. And that's... to me, that's one of the greatest gifts of our generation, is of this generation of seekers that, you know, we're in our beautiful Sangha now, is this opportunity to really look at what we think is the worst of human experiences, and maybe to do a total 180 on that. Maybe it's the best of human experiences, you know, maybe it's an upgrade to our experience. Not that having a body is a bad thing, but there are, you know, downsides to it as well as upsides. So, and I think Christ, he's a very example of that. Look, it's not what you think. Even when it's such a horrible ending to the body, it's not at all what you think, and it's not the end.
Yeah.
It's actually might be a beginning of something. Yeah. So, because I always kind of had this feeling there was something I wasn't getting about the whole death experience. But when I actually went back without all the beliefs about the Bible and actually read it again from a more awakened place, the crucifixion and the resurrection, I was like, oh, this guy's some really advanced yogi here, you know.
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, my egoic senses, well, he's obviously just being blessed by God and, you know, he was lucky or something, you know, but this is something that every human being has the capacity to do. That was very clear. And that's always been what feeling I've been left with every encounter I've had with Christ is, don't put me on a pedestal type of thing, you know, I'm exactly the same as you. Exactly.
And that's what Course in Miracles does over and over and over again. Yeah. I am your brother. Do not put me above you.
Yeah.
He says it over and over. He says, I just walked ahead of you, but I'm here to walk by your side.
Yeah. So, I would love what Ram Dass said, we're just walking each other home, you know. I think that's so beautiful and wonderful.
So true.
Wow. Well, we're nearly up on our time, but I was going to ask you before we finish, if there is something you would like to say to anyone watching this who perhaps hasn't had that encounter with Christ yet and might be wondering about it, nervous about it, or wondering how to even go about that. Is there anything you feel guided to say?
He's in your heart. He is in your heart, and he loves you so much. And from someone who didn't believe that I was lovable and didn't believe I was loved, it's been an incredible blessing. And if you feel alone, he is a great one, because he's, because of his humanness, his humanity, he's one of us, and he's a realized being. You know, 2,000 years ago, he woke up, and his mission is to love everybody into their wholeness, and so that they know who they really are. So there is nothing to be afraid of, that's for sure, and everything to gain.
Wow. Thank you. That's so beautiful. So beautiful. Mm-hmm. To love everyone into wholeness. That's if you could epitomize Christ in a sentence, it's that, isn't it? Wow. That's powerful. Wow. Well, thank you so much.
What would you say? What would you say, Helen?
It's like asking me to describe God in a sentence. I realize I've just done that to you as well, right? I've just put you on the spot, so I'm gonna I probably just want to say that he just does not care what you think is wrong with you. He sees through that, and he doesn't need anything, doesn't even need you to open, doesn't even need you to be brave. It's just there anyway, loving you eternally, whether you never choose to open. It's so unconditional.
He doesn't see anything wrong with you.
Yeah.
It's like he cannot see anything wrong with you. He's been so corrected in his own vision that all he sees is your perfection.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's how he healed.
Yeah. Your faith has healed you, as he said, to that woman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the major. I think if I had to put it in one sentence, it would be don't miss out. Don't miss out of fear, right? Something that's going to be the most amazing. Because
It's free.
that was what really pushed me in the end, and why I ended up begging and pleading. I know we're laughing about it, where I was begging and pleading to this inanimate object in my bedroom for some kind of divine intervention. It was like, I just could not. I started to get an idea that even if I did leave this body, I was going to have to come right back next time and still work on this same issue.
I know, darn it.
I can't do that anymore. So, I have to nail this lifetime. So, yeah, it was fear of missing out in the end, because I started to maybe realize that Christ wasn't at all what I thought. Like, I want that. And that overrode the fear, the worry that he might not accept me or something, Yeah. So, wow, this has been a
We didn't.
beautiful talk. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I just want to mention Mary Magdalene
Yes, yes.
because I love her so much and I love Mother Mary so much. I mean, they are to me just a beautiful triad of beings,
Yeah.
each with their own gifts and blessings, so I just encourage, if you're interested, with these beautiful women.
Maybe we could meet a certain point and talk about that too, because that would be very interesting. I haven't had very many experiences at all. I'll do some research in the meantime. See what happens when I open.
Inner research, I
Yeah.
assume.
Oh dear, I have to do that now. What a shame, you know.
Oh yeah, I have to meet with these amazing beings and see what they have to say to me. Yeah, how I feel.
Hard life,
Oh,
yeah.
too bad.
Too bad. And thank you for sharing your insights. It's always so heartwarming to hear these kind of stories and experiences. Real people's lives changed by his love is just that's the message we need to spread, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Thank
Absolutely.
you.
Because that was his message. I mean, come on. He threw away all the Old Testament and he came up with two precepts to live by. Both begin with love.
Yeah, that's about sums it up, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you,
Well, thank
Helen.
you, thank
Thanks
you,
so much
thank
for
you,
this opportunity.
thank you. Wonderful.